ChevyUSA.com.
Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Tomorrow is the runoff election in the city of Tampa. Residents will elect a new mayor and decide three races for city council. This hour, we're going to hear a debate for the three city council races, which will be on tomorrow's ballot. I'm going to play audio from 3 days ago. On Friday, the Tampa Tiger Bay Club hosted a forum attended by five of the six candidates running for Tampa City Council. And I want to say thank you to TBAE for audio help, and thank you to Tampa Tiger Bay Club. You're going to hear from the five candidates now. In District 1, Joseph Citro faces Walter Smith. In District 3, John Dingfelder is running against Stephen Lytle. And in the East Tampa District 5, Orlando Gutis faces Jeffrey Rhodes. But Jeffrey Rhodes was not at Friday's forum. So you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. It's 12:07 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan, and we're bringing you an hour now of this forum. In these first two questions that we're going to hear, candidates were asked about schools and about what they've learned in the campaign. And the first person that we'll hear from is Orlando Goods from District 5.
You're right at the end. What's the greatest takeaway that you've learned, you've gained, or that you believe is important in this race? If you would share that with us from your perspective and how it relates to your district.
Well, I think for me, my district is unique. We have everybody. We have people who are affluent, middle class, and poor folks. It's a big district. For me is being engaged, which I've always been, understanding the needs of the people. What I take away from it is understanding their needs, which I do. I'm tired now. It's been a long haul. I think everyone's tired, but you keep struggling, you keep fighting, and I'm a fighter. I know how to fight. I've been doing it a long time in this city, and I encourage people to fight. Fight for what you want to do, what you want to believe in. And for the biggest takeaway of me from yesterday, I took a group of seniors from Woodland Terrace. A lot of them are handicapped, they can't drive. But they had an issue in their community. And they called me and said, could you take us? We know you're busy campaigning, but can you take us to city council so we can tell the council we don't want this in our neighborhood? And I felt so proud that they called me and trust me to do that. So that's my biggest takeaway, that people trust me, they believe me, and they want me to help them all the time.
Thank you. Perfect timing, too. You do have 1 minute on this answer. Thank you.
That was Orlando Gutis. We're going to hear from Stephen Lytle.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Stephen Lytle, and I'm running for the Tampa City Council District 3 race. When I think about what I've learned over the last 7 or 8 months on the campaign trail, what it really resonates with me is that over and over again, I feel like residents haven't had their voice heard. I hear time and time again, we've brought this concern to city council, or we brought this concern to administration or the mayor, and we haven't seen the needle moved. We've talked time and time again about issues that have been addressed, we thought, but continued to see challenges on, like stormwater and transportation. And people are ready for change. People are ready to see the city move in the right direction. People are ready to see leaders who are gonna hold the administration accountable so that we can move the city forward and know that we have a brighter future for our children. I know that I have the experience to do that, and I know that with my platform to strengthen our neighborhoods, improve our infrastructure, and do so through sound fiscal policy, we'll be ready to listen, we'll be ready to hear everybody.
Thank you.
That was Stephen Lytle. This is John Dingfelder.
Well, thanks for the question, and thank you, Tiger Bay, for putting this on, doing a great job as always. I think my takeaway is, for the last 20, 25 years, I've been deeply engaged in this community, and you all have been deeply engaged in the community in all the different ways. I've been working with Peggy and with Kathy Betancourt and with Mark Proctor on so many different issues. But what I found really interesting this go-round is the engagement that's out there in the community that I didn't expect. You know, I expect you guys to show up, you know, once a month and be deeply engaged, because I know that's the way you are. My boss, Julie Holt, so engaged in everything. But what I'm really interested in and actually relieved to see is that young folks and other folks are deeply engaged. Up in Tampa Heights, they're concerned about their community and the interstate and that sort of thing. Up in Sulphur Springs, they're concerned about, obviously, affordable housing and things like that. But that type of engagement, I think, is really important for the strength of our and future of our city. I'm John Dingfelder. I hope you vote for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Walter Smith is next.
You know, I'm not only a civil engineer, but I'm also a middle school science teacher. And I'm in charge of that particular department. And, you know, I go around to all the different communities. I talk to different people, as all my other colleagues here have done. And it's always been a matter of feedback that is unsolicited, that always does my heart good. And I got to tell you, one day, very recently, one of my students came to me with his little brother. And he said, Mr. Smith, my little brother wants to talk to you. I said, okay, sure. I said, what's going on, little man? He said, listen. He said, Mr. Smith, I want to be just like you when I grow up. I said, really? And, I, you know, that flattered me to no end. He said, I want to be just like you when I grow up. I want to be the city councilman. I was like, okay. He says, I saw the sign in the yard down the street, and I want one of those signs, too. And I said, well, you can have one, man. And, you know, that's one of the greatest feelings ever, is to know that kids are looking up to you and seeing you, and they believe in you.
That was Walter Smith. This is Joseph Cetro.
Joseph Cetro, Tampa City Council, District 1. You know, I really enjoy this. I enjoy walking around, shaking hands, knocking on doors, listening to the people. And most everybody that I talk to, they want the basic necessities. Give me good roads. Give me well-lit roads. Keep me safe with fire and police. Give me fresh, clean drinking water. And take away my waste, solid and liquid. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what City Tampa is all about, is giving the citizens the basic necessities. Everything else is icing on the cake. But the number one thing I hear the most is, we need better transportation. So ladies and gentlemen, I will make a promise that you will be heard. My door will be open to you. My ear will be yours. Again, let's put Tampa to work, not only for itself, but for you, the citizens.
Thank you.
That was Joseph Cetro.
I'm Cindy Stewart, Hillsborough County School Board member for District 3 in North Tampa. Proud Tiger Bay member for 7 years. My question is, obviously, the city of Tampa has its issues with schools, and I want to know what you think you can do to step up and step in line and align yourselves with the district to move those schools in a different direction, because we need your help.
Cindy, that's a great question. And even though the city of Tampa is not involved with your school board, we should be active. We should be proactive with the schools. First of all, I'm with Roosevelt Elementary. I'm the co-chair of the Roosevelt Elementary Report Card Assemblies. I love going every 9 weeks to cheer the kids on for the great achievements they have had. Number one, first and foremost, some of this 1 cent transportation tax we're going to be getting. I would like to start from the schools out to ensure that they have sidewalks for kids to walk to school on, where they don't have to go into the streets to walk to school. That would be the first thing that I would like to also do. Also, after school activities, where we get the kids involved, not only in social skills, but also with work skills.
I am, as I just said, I'm a middle school teacher. I've taught in Hillsborough County Schools. I've taught adult education and a training for jobs and things of that nature. One of the biggest things that's important here is to look at the fact that, no, we are not the school board. But that is no excuse for being involved in the community. For 18 years plus, I've done just that. And it is incumbent upon us to organize with our communities, to give them what they need in order to supplement the type of education that our children are supposed to be getting in our public school systems and so forth. We have to do what needs to be done in order to make certain that our children are successful. That means they're not just running around in pre-K, just playing around, but we have serious curriculum that prepares them to be able to write their names, to identify colors, and things of that nature when they come to the school system, and that's very critical. And I've been working on that same thing along with my father here in West Tampa, the Dr. Walter Smith Library, and in the school system. Thank you.
Well, that was Walter Smith. Up next is John Dingfelder. earlier we heard
Cindy,
from Joseph Citro.
Thanks for that question, and thanks for your service. I sent my children to our public schools. I think our public schools did a great job. I think we need to continue to support our public schools. I've also been an attorney for 30 years now, but I took 3 years off to teach in public school. I taught 2 years in Booker T. Washington over here in Ybor City and a year down at Robinson. And that was very eye-opening because we have great challenges in our public schools, especially in certain schools, including Booker T. Washington. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about the students and our challenges. I learned a lot about myself. In terms of what we can do to help, I agree with Joe. I think we can use our rec centers and our rec center staff in a collaborative way and I know we do now, but we can continue to do that in any possible way, and I encourage you to approach us and tell us what we can do to help and also what sidewalks we need to improve, because we will have some money.
Thank
to do
you.
That. Thank you.
That was John Dingfelder. Up next is his opponent in District 3, Stephen Lytle.
I think it's a great question because we talk a lot about how we want to impact people's daily lives and those with children. It's very important for us to make sure that we're addressing that. And I think there's two things in my campaign that will directly impact how we partner with Hillsborough County Schools and impact education in the city. First and foremost, infrastructure improvement. We know that students within 2 miles are no longer bused to school, and so they're required to ride their bike or walk to school. And so that creates a safety hazard for them, because in neighborhoods like McFarlane Park, where Missy is president, and many other neighborhoods across the city, we have issues because it's unsafe. There's ditches, there's no sidewalks, and these kids are walking along unsafe streets to get to school. So the first thing that we can do is utilize the transportation funding that's available to make the sidewalks. We can utilize a stormwater assessment to fill in the ditches and make sure that we're doing that in a smart way. The second thing we can do is, in my own neighborhood, I'm a neighborhood association president, and by strengthening and empowering our neighborhoods across the city, we can develop better partnerships, which will be more inclusive neighborhood associations who involve themselves with the schools, create better parent-teacher associations, and then can get more involved with that.
Stephen Lytle, this is Orlando Hoops.
It's a good question. It's experience. Something that I have working with children in schools, in communities every day. When a community fails, a school fails. I don't care what anybody tells you. If you don't have kids who are going to school, getting up because they have issues in the home, they're sleeping in hotels and motels and infested, that's how they don't get educated. When internet is not in certain areas of the city, certain apartment complex, they have to get a letter from the apartment complex to take to the school so the internet can be higher in their apartment complexes. We have to look how they live to be able to teach. And once we do that, we'll be able to make sure our kids have what they need. But also, the mayor's youth court, I have a problem with it. I don't think it serves all children. It needs to have another tier to it. Every kid ain't going to college. Most of those kids in that program, they're going to school. I want to make sure the school district has a value system of knowing what every job the city council, the city has, so we can be partnering with the school district. That's going to make it better.
Thank you.
Well, that was Orlando Goods. He is running for District 5 in Tampa City Council. His opponent was not at this event. His name is Jeffrey Rhodes. They're running in District 5, East Tampa District. We also have two candidates running for citywide District 3, Stephen Lytle and John Dingfelder, and two candidates running off in District 1, which is citywide, Walter Smith and Joseph Citro. And we'll hear more from them throughout the hour. I just want to let you know that you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to Midpoint Monday at 12:19 in the afternoon. And we're going to hear now questions where the candidates were asked, and we're going to hear first from the response from Orlando Goudis, first about the Olympics, about whether the Olympics should come to town, and then also about criminal justice reform. So here is the first we'll hear the question, and then we'll hear from all five candidates.
I'm Ron Weaver, and I asked this question this morning of at least one of the mayoral candidates. In 2005, we tried to get an Olympics for 2012, and we struck out because of transportation. Now that we have a $15 billion transportation program over the next 30 years, is it time to try again? Is that a bridge too far, or is that an ideal way to mobilize all of our resources on the world stage? And if you're elected to council, how will you make sure it happens if we're getting the Olympics?
Well, me being a sports advocate, being a coach for many, many years and coaching kids today, I would love the Olympics to come here. Make sure we have the right people in place and make sure that we have committees and boards that are inclusive of everybody, to have everybody's input, not just certain people's input. I think that's important, so you know what everybody's thinking. when you have a plan with everyone at the table, you get better ideas, you get better results. I'm a results-driven person. I like solutions. That's what our campaign is built on, solutions. So, Mr. Reaver, I'll be happy to help build that. We need that. It'll make our city grow. It'll make us what some people call a great city. And you need to have those type of activities. But we got to make sure that we have the infrastructure, the hotels, which is a big thing, because when I have conventions here with my fraternities, they always say, you don't have enough hotels. You don't have this, you don't have that. We've got to make sure we have those amenities so they'll come and we can sign the dotted line for them. Thank you.
I was a product of public school education and was the first in my family to go to college straight out of high school because I was awarded a track and field scholarship. So Olympic sports play a very important role in where I stand today because I wouldn't be standing here if it wasn't for the opportunity that was provided to me at the University of South Florida. Go Bulls. So what I will say, though, is I'd love to see that happen. I think it's great. I'm not an expert in that, so I can't say yes or no. I think it's great for the city. What I would caution is how many cities do we see across the globe that bring in these sports, bring in these Olympics, and they build all of this infrastructure for it, not just the infrastructure for roads, but the facilities to host the sports. And then those infrastructure, the improvements, never see anything. They go to waste. The housing goes to waste. I think about how we're going to spend our money, and there's other things that we can fix, like affordable housing, transportation, education. There's so many other things that I think that we can do in this city that are much more important than to bring us on a global stage for the Olympics, and I'd like to see us focus on those things instead.
Thank you.
Well, Ron, I think it's a neat idea. When actually I was having breakfast with the Taranchuk family this morning, and I thought it was a pretty neat idea then, too. But I think that, you know, my 8 years on city council, I tried to be as collaborative as possible with the League of Cities, working with the folks on the other side of the bay on a variety of issues. And I think if we tried to go for that again, not only do we need to build a transit system, or at least have one being built at that time, we need to make sure we connect ourselves with Orlando, which I know is in the process. But I also think if we did it, I think it should be a regional bid. I think it should be a bid with Central Florida, with Orlando, because we all have to admit everybody knows the mouse. But we can capitalize on that. We could have events here, rowing and, you know, others, beach-type sports and that sort of thing, and Orlando could have theirs, and we could work together, because that's what I believe is important, is working together. Thank you.
That was John Dingfelder. Earlier we heard Stephen Lytle, his opponent in District 3.
Something like that
this
happen,
is Walter
but
Smith.
We have a couple of things that we got to deal with first. One of those things being connectivity of communities, connectivity of people, and making certain that everybody's going to be able to participate in this process. Historically, we have seen where that has not happened in the city of Tampa, and so there has to be some serious oversight with regard to that issue. We have to make sure that businesses are connected to that in order to, small businesses especially, are able to be successful as a result of that type of visit and that type of infrastructural change that's going to take place. So as infrastructural changes, as an engineer, I can tell you this, as infrastructural changes start to take place, we have to make certain that people are in sync with it. That all those businesses that have been failing over the years have an opportunity. All those communities that have had failing infrastructure have opportunities. That we have something as simple as tar on the road before we start building something to set up for an Olympic stadium. That's what we need to focus in on to make certain that we're ready for that. But I would love to see it happen.
That was Walter Smith. This is
Ron,
Joseph Sutro.
That is a great question. Whether we want to doubt it or not, we are a great sports community. Look at the things we've had. We've had Super Bowls. We've had Final Fours. We've had hockey playoffs. We've had baseball playoffs. We are a sports community. Imagine the economic impact, not only to Tampa, but to Tampa Bay, parts of Lakeland, and further north. It would be a great idea. It would be a wonderful event. But, of course, we need to have things in place. My voice would be heard on something like this when and if I got on Sports Authority. When and if I got on MPO, that's where my voice would be heard. And I would like to look at this simply because of the economic impact that it would have to our city and our area.
Thank you.
That was Joseph Citro.
Good afternoon, fellows. My name's Adam Bantner. I'm generally speaking a conservative, moderate Republican, but I feel a lot of liberal, progressive ideas generally work in the area of criminal justice. I'm a criminal defense attorney. And there's a lot of civil citation programs out there now to help people avoid having a record, both juvenile and adult. However, that system, like any other well-intentioned idea, can be abused. It allows Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment violations to kind of be swept under the rug in the name of law enforcement because it never hits a system where there's a judge and jury. So the question is, how do we avoid a program like that from being abused where the law enforcement is essentially fact finder, executioner, and sentencer all in one?
Adam, you conservative? No, really? I look at that more the standpoint of it is judicial. It is quasi-judicial. Each case has to be taken case by case by case. We can't do a broad brush on it, as I've seen working with boards and committees within the city. Anything, in my opinion, to keep a young man or a young woman from having a record or going to jail for a minuscule amount of marijuana, in my opinion, that will always work. It will work for their future. It will work for the betterment of Tampa. I cannot control what law enforcement or what any other branch of the judicial system does, but I will keep my ear open and I will take a look at it and I will go to department heads and say, are we doing this right? Are we doing this correctly? So in answer to your question, I don't have the authority, but I will keep my eye on it. And as I said, anything to keep a young person out of jail for something, a stupid mistake that they may have done for a little bit of marijuana or maybe running a red light or something, is beneficial to everybody.
Thank you.
That was Joseph C.
Joe is correct.
This is Walter Smith.
Absolutely correct. But here's the other part of that story. Now, you know, we have to make certain that we are doing what? Organizing again. Here we go with organizing. We have to make sure that we are facilitating those bodies and institutions that need to be met with in order to help with that process. You see, it's not just a matter of going to go visit this department and that department, and it doesn't. I've said it many, many times on the campaign trail. My job does not begin and end in city council chambers or in any board table or chambers. It begins and ends with each and every one of you. So that means I have to talk to those churches and those institutions that people go to for help to make certain that those parents have the type of guidance and help that they need to have in order to be able to guide and help their children to have a better quality of life as long as they are following the law. That is very critical. So we have to supplement that.
Thank you.
That was Walter Smith. This is John Dingvelder, who's running for District 3.
Well, Adam, a great question. As a defense attorney, as an assistant public defender, we always have those concerns about Fourth Amendment and other civil rights that gets, you know, often sometimes get stepped on. I think there's a fair chance that we might have a police chief as a mayor. She knows a little bit about policing. I think that's where we would start. I don't want to give up those great programs. I think the civil citation program is a good program, but obviously everything can be tweaked up. And I think that could start at TPD and HCSO, and we could work closely with them to say, these are some of the defense bar's concerns. Let's address them. Let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. But the alternative programs that Ms. Holt and other folks in the criminal justice system have worked on, I got to work on recently, too. I was a member of Veterans Court. It's a fantastic alternative program to incarceration. Mental health court, the same type of thing. You know, let's work with the folks who are mentally ill and not just start sending people away to prison and jail, because that's not right. Thank you.
Well, that was John Dingvelder. This is Stephen Lytle.
You know, Adam, I think the answer comes down to, as elected officials, we're not experts in everything, right? I work in HR. John's a lawyer. Walter is an engineer and a teacher, and we can't pretend that we're experts. And our city can't pretend that we're experts in everything too. We can't say that our citation program's the best and it outperforms everybody else. And so what I think we need to do is ask the right questions and be open to feedback like yours and say, are we doing what's right by the people and are we doing what's right by this system? And then we have to look at our comparable cities, our peer cities, and say, what are they doing to address this and how has it worked effectively? We can't pretend that what we do is right and we're better than everybody else. We have to be open to feedback and we have to be open to understanding what works and what doesn't work, and then be open to adjusting it as necessary to make the improvements that you're talking about.
Well, folks, as the only candidate up here who's actually had to take someone's rights away or send somebody to prison, I can tell you many, many stories. But it's economics. When people are hungry, they take. When people don't have a place to stay, they burglarize a house that's abandoned and stay in it. You have to change the conditions. When you change conditions, you change people's lifestyles. That's why I want to look at a reentry ordinance for the city of Tampa. I think it'll work. Whereas people go to apply for a job, the city automatically, if a person has a passing discretion, they go into a city reentry program. That way they learn about recidivism. They learn about city government. They learn how to operate within themselves. Then you don't have the door, the revolving door at Julie's office, Andrew's office. You have to know how people live to understand their conditions. And once you understand the conditions, you can help them. You can have civil society all day long, but if you don't change their conditions, you'll continue to have those issues.
Thank you.
That's District 5 candidate Orlando Goodes, who is facing Jeffrey Rhodes in tomorrow's runoff election in the city of Tampa. The two other races that we're looking at in this debate that happened Friday at the Tampa Tiger Bay Club is District 1, Joseph Citro facing Walter Smith, and in District 3, John Dingfelder running against Stephen Lytle. So you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org. We're bringing you the Tampa Tiger Bay Club that was the forum attended by five of the six candidates running for Tampa City Council last Friday. The election is tomorrow. The city will also be electing a mayor, and the runoff is between David Straz and Jane Castor. And we're not taking your phone calls this hour. Sorry about that. If you do want to leave a voicemail with your thoughts about who should be elected, you can call 813-238-8001 and leave a voicemail at extension 114. Right now, we're going to come up on some controversy in this forum. There was surprisingly controversy about what people's most impactful book is. And also the other question is whether there's fluff in the Tampa City budget. So now we're going to hear from these five candidates: Orlando Goodes, Stephen Lytle, John Dingfelder, Walter Smith, and Joseph Citro on 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg.
Hi, how are you? I'm Karen Busing, and I would like to know one thing. What book have you read, other than the Bible, which will impact the way in which you serve, and how will it impact that?
It's a book called Offense, Defense. It's a football book. It teaches you about competitiveness. It teaches you about challenges and skills, about your opponents. I think it works with city council because you're dealing with people. You're dealing with other councilmen. It's like you're playing a game. And you got to know how to play the game to be on the field. If I need 3 votes, I got to see how those other councilmen are thinking. I got to be able to know where the ball is at so I can be able to take the ball and take it in or punt it. I got to know what to do. So for me, my book is Offense Defense because it teaches me strategy. Strategy is everything. If you have no strategy, there's no plan. But if I have a strategy, I have a plan because I'm looking to get 2 yards or if I need 1. So to me, Offense Defense is my best book.
That's Orlando Goodes. This is Stephen Lytle.
Well, I'll tell you, in true millennial fashion, I don't read books. I listen to podcasts. I travel quite a bit, and I'm on the edge. I'm on the edge of the millennials, right? But I travel quite a bit for work, so I can't read a book and drive at the same time. So I understand completely, but I can't read a book and drive at the same time. So the time that's best for me to be able to listen and develop and understand, because I work in HR, and so personal and professional development is very important to me. So I utilize that time when I'm not on calls to listen to podcasts. And one of the ones that I listen to is, it's called The Dad's Edge. I'm a new father. My little girl was born on Thanksgiving, and I have a lot to learn about being a new father, just like I'll have a lot to learn about being a city councilman potentially. And so what I do is I listen to that because it tells me about how to be a better person, how to be more empathetic. It tells me how to focus on professional development and personal development. And I think that's important because you have to understand that you're gonna have to be open to feedback, and I'm gonna have to be able to listen to what our concerns are for our residents and how we can address those appropriately. And so I've really enjoyed listening to that and kind of opening myself up to that development.
Karen, I have a feeling my bookshelves might be similar to yours or Bob's perhaps. I can't pick out one specific book because at any given time next to my bed there's 3 or 4 presidential biographies. And I love them. And Lynn, don't worry, I'm not going to run for president. although there are seem to be a lot of folks doing it. But seriously, I've been reading one, I can't remember the title exactly, but it compares leadership skills during times of crisis. And it speaks to, obviously, to Roosevelt, I think it was Teddy Roosevelt, and anyway, a couple of others. But Franklin Roosevelt just grips me. And he grips me in a very personal way, and I know my mother's going to be mad at me. But my mother's a polio survivor, and I want to give her a big round of applause for you. But we love her dearly, and we're so proud of everything she's accomplished. And she, just like Franklin Roosevelt, she just never saw the challenges. She just plowed right through them, including having me 2 years after she survived polio. So thank you.
That was John Dingfelder. Earlier we heard from Stephen Lytle. This is Walter
books.
Smith.
Several books. One of them is Eyes Off the Prize, and which is the story about the early years of the NAACP and how the NAACP in its earliest years dealt with the issue of human rights and were forced to take a position ultimately under the Roosevelt administration on civil rights in order to push through the type of laws and things that they needed done to protect the black citizens of the United States during a very crucial time because the United States didn't want to be on the world stage or anything. The reason that that's so important is because it led me to read Long Walk to Freedom when I was in the Republic of South Africa. Now, when I read Long Walk to Freedom, it was the autobiography of Nelson Mandela, who actually was a friend of mine. But when we talked about the issue of community and what needs to be done, we should never allow anybody to change our stomping grounds, to change the direction we're headed in, to change what we intend to get done for our communities and for ourselves and for our freedoms. We should protect those things at all costs.
That was Walter Thank Smith. You. This is Joseph Citro.
My tongue in cheek, but I mean it honestly. Jerry Kaczynski, he wrote a book, Being There, which was later made into a movie with starring Peter Sellers. And the character's name was Chauncey Gardner. And it taught me that even though I don't agree with people, even though they may be different from me, you listen to them. And you listen to them long enough, and finally you'll figure something out what someone is trying to tell you. And I've been able to listen to people. And that is my favorite book, is Being There.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joseph Citro.
Good afternoon, Bishop Michelle B. Patty. David Strass has said over and over that there's fluff in the budget, but not once have he told us about the fluff. Now that you all have had an opportunity to look at the budget, can y'all tell us where the fluff is, and if there is some, what are you going to do about it?
This is Joseph Citro.
Get to the fluff.
Wow. Bishop Patty, and you had me start on that one. You know, first of all, we need more staffing. We've got permitting. We've got inspections, code enforcement, parks and recreation. We need more staffing. But first thing I want to do is I want to find out where in the heck our sidewalk fund went to? Where did our tree fund go to? Those are the things, those aren't supposed to go into the general budget. They're supposed to be designed specifically for building sidewalks, specifically for planting trees. Miss Patty, I can't find the fluff because I'll tell you what, Mr. Strass can't find it either. But right now what I want to find out is where these monies are going to. That will be my first one.
This is Walter Smith.
There are some critical points that we need to take hold of, and part of it has to do with being able to work with communities and community leadership in order to determine what actually is fluff. We can't dictate that just by simply looking at it by ourselves. We have to work with the people to find out what the people's needs are. Now, one of the main things that comes to mind is a meeting that took place in West Tampa and the concept of what happened that evening. A Parks and Recreation director came and said to us, we have two computers in our park with an archaic system and over 100 kids that we're supposed to service. And I sat there looking at everybody else like, am I the only person who heard what she just said? That's a problem, because we've taken money out of places where it needs to be. We've got to service our communities. We've got to service our kids. We got to make sure we got tar on the road. We got to make sure that we're taking care of our responsibilities there.
Thank you.
That can't do that when you don't work with communities to figure it out.
Thank you.
And this is John Dingfelder.
Well, Lynn does all of our design work and our campaign, and one of the things that we agreed on was putting on our yard sign experience counts. And I'm proud of my opponent, Stephen. He's worked on a couple of budgets in terms of being on the budget advisory committee. But I've actually been there in the trenches passing 7 budgets, billion-dollar budgets at City Hall. And I don't just say that to pat myself on the back, because what I'm reminding everybody is that at least 4 of those budgets were during the recession, okay? Because just like everybody here, we at the city had to tighten our belts. This next couple of years, we're going to have to tighten our belts again. And I don't know if we want to call it fluff, but we can always find places to tighten up. One of the ways that I think it's important to find those places is to work with our employees, not just the senior managers, but work with our middle managers, work with all the employees, because they're out there every single day and they know where we can tighten up. That's the kind of thing I like to do. Thank you.
That was John Dingfelder coming up.
Well, as John
Lytle
stated, I've had the honor of serving on the Budget Advisory Committee for the last 4 years. And in that role, we make official recommendations to City Council based on budgeting strategy that champions what we're going to do for our residents now and what we're going to do to move Tampa forward in the future. There's fluff in our budget. I'll tell you where fluff is. I work in HR. We're paying 50% cost for our contract employees to come work for us. On average, it's about 35% industry-wide. Why are we paying 50% for contract employees? Why are we paying solid waste employees who are driving the trucks about $95,000 a year because we're paying so much in overtime? Why don't we just hire the right amount of employees to do the work instead of paying time and a half? You know, why do we have truck drivers making $100,000 to drive solid waste around? That's fluff. When we went to go ask for a bathroom in Rivercrest Park, tell me why it cost $300,000, the same amount that it cost me to build my house, have my house where it was built, plus the property. That's called fluff. We have an opportunity to make a difference. John's never passed a $1 billion budget. I've worked on those budgets. I've worked hard on them. I know them, and I'm going to be the one to hold our administration accountable.
Thank you.
That was Stephen Lytle. This is Orlando
Steve,
Goetz.
You ran right up my alley about building a bathroom, because I can tell you that fluff. You go to Reagan Park, and that park costs us almost $300,000 to be built. That's ridiculous. And it has, what, 1 bathroom in it? And it's so small? Yeah, that's fluff. He's right. Look at where we're spending our money at. Who's getting the money? Private projects. We have to look at that and see, well, why are we spending money here when someone else can do a job less expensive? Let's look at these RFPs that are going out. Let's look and see who's been getting these jobs. And now we'll find the fluff. Because you can find other contractors. The little guy, he needs something. Those RFPs need to change. You need to have 3 levels in those RFPs. Some of the RFPs that go out, only a couple of people can bid on. That's ridiculous, a city of this magnitude, that people are hungry. Contractors are hungry, small developers. We have to give everybody a chance. You have to have 3 levels, 3 tiers, so everybody can eat. That's where the fluff is. Everybody can't eat because fluff is all over the place, and that's why we can't eat and survive.
Thank you.
Well, that was Orlando Goetz. He's running for the District 5 seat in the city of Tampa. That's East Tampa. His opponent was not at this forum. His name is Jeffrey Rhodes. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. It's 12:44 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday. And I'm playing audio from 3 days ago. On Friday, the Tampa Tiger Bay Club hosted a forum that was attended by 5 of the 6 candidates for running for Tampa City Council. The runoff election is tomorrow. I want to thank TBAE for audio help, and you're going to hear from the 5 candidates the rest of the hour as well. The other 4 candidates are in District 1. Joseph Citro is facing Walter Smith, and in District 3, John Dingfelder is running against Stephen Lytle. So we're going to hear more of this forum on 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa, WMNF.org, and the WMNF smartphone app. Right now, we'll hear 2 more questions right now, and they're questions about arts and about affordable housing. After we hear the question about arts, the first candidate we'll hear from is Orlando Goetz. So here's questions about arts and affordable housing for City of Tampa candidates.
Thank you for running. For all of you, it's courageous to do that. Kathy Betancourt, quick question. We already talked about jock stuff, about the sports. Well, the people in the arts community don't have million-dollar owners, don't have rich people. What are you going to do to help the arts in this community survive? Because they contribute probably more to economic development than six or seven football games a year.
Thank you, Kathy.
Ms. Betancourt, that is a part of our plan, too. The city has one grant writer. A scene of this magnitude, one grant writer, that's ridiculous. I'm looking at our East Tampa CRA right now, which I'm going to propose that we get a grant writer, because I want to build a youth and senior center in East Tampa of the arts. I want a facility where kids can go dance, have gymnastics, have a decent floor, the kids can have a place where they can go and do their thing, whatever that thing is. So I understand that. It's very crucial that these parks and recreation mirror around the arts so kids can understand culture. They can have a little more diversity, whereas New Tampa has $5,000 of a new 5,000 square feet of a new building. Williams Park has 800 square feet, and 700, and they've been on the list forever. I know New Tampa has a big tax base, God bless them. But my thing is, we have to make sure we're fair with what we're doing, and you're absolutely right, we're lacking there, and we don't need to lack there.
That was Orlando Gutis. Here's Stephen Lytle.
You know, Ms. Betancourt, I would tell you that probably also comes from the statewide level where they're not putting money into the arts anymore. And we're lucky to have people like the Gobioff Foundation in Tampa to do placemaking grants and help our city have some art. But we pale in comparison to our peer in St. Pete. And where do we start? Well, St. Pete started with murals, right? That was a community-driven, art-driven projects that got that kind of culture built there. So we have to start at the community level. The Hillsborough County Arts Foundation offers every 501c3 $5,000 they apply for the grant to do placemaking and to do arts grants. We've done that within my own neighborhood association, becoming a 501c3, and our city has to strengthen and empower our neighborhoods to understand what's out there to do it at a community level. As a result of what we've been able to accomplish in my own neighborhood, we've received the Hillsborough County Arts Award for the last 2 years. One for starting the Heights Unites Music and Arts Festival, and one for doing the first street mural in the city of Tampa, was also used for traffic calming measures. Arts are important, but it starts at a community level, so we're doing what the community wants, and then we'll go from there.
That was Stephen Lytle. This is John Dingfelder.
Kathy, I think you're going for that Tiger Award there. Arts are extremely important. It's one of the reasons that I asked to serve on the Arts Council with Art Keeble, and I did that for several years with Linda Salsena and others. And I still believe in it strongly. We the other day, Lynn and I were over with Paul Wilburn, and as you recall, back in the beginning of the Iori administration, one of the first things we did was we hired Paul to be our art czar. Okay, I thought it was a great statement because not only were we putting our money where our mouth was, but we were putting somebody there to really make the focus on the arts. At that time, we were talking about Ybor City and making an arts community. We need to do that again. We need to really make it the focus, because I don't want to look across the bay and just be envious. Okay, I want us to be just as good or better than they are at the arts in that regard. And then we can work together with St. Pete and the rest of them and make it a Bay Area-wide effort. Thank you.
That was John Dingfelder. Coming up is Walter Smith.
When I was on the Barrio Latino Commission, one of the things that we did consistently was deal with the issue of maintaining the historic fabric of the Latin Quarter in Ybor and making certain that, because we had a lot of murals that were being done, and a couple of them were being done illegally, the wrong way. But that's okay. We looked at it and we tried to figure out how we could work with those organizations and with those individuals in order to make it work. And it has worked. Now, if we can take that same concept and expand it across Tampa, we've seen it. We've seen it work in West Tampa. We've seen it work in East Tampa. We've seen it work in Ybor City. And it can work everywhere else as far as that's concerned. Now, the other part of it is we have great weather here in Tampa. And I'm a jazz head. I don't know about anybody else, but I love jazz. Right? Okay, all right. So why not have an annual jazz festival? More of them. Why not give these people in the communities more say-so about how we can expand this process and get the kids more involved in this, which helps to do what? Mentor them in the more positive activities that are wholesome and help our communities.
Thank you.
That was Walter Smith. This is Joseph Citro.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the greatest artists in Tampa, who I also have a relationship with and who is my my biggest endorser, Miss Ali Serrano. If you ever want your portrait taken, she is the greatest. That is a plug, but yes. City needs to start doing some private-public work together. It's like affordable housing. Artists need a place to be able to apply their trade. We have wonderful cigar factories in this town that are sitting empty. Matter of fact, most of the owners are letting them fall apart so they can tear them down and build something else. I would like to see a public-private partnership for co-ops for artists to work together. That's what I would like to see.
Thank you. I'm Patrick Basquet with Shoemaker. This week I opened up and watched a video of Mayor Buckhorn, his exit video, and I was moved. It'll tug at your heartstrings. Great deal of nostalgia about the last 8 years. And I'm very excited to see what she will do after the election in the next 8 years. The question is affordable housing. You will have a lot to say as city council members about a zoning board about affordable housing, how you could promote it and ensure that we have available affordable housing over the next 8 years.
That is a wonderful question. John, were you on the board with me that meeting? I think you were. We saw a RS50 lot that wanted to encroach into the setbacks. RS50 is supposed to have 50-foot frontage. This lot only had 25-foot frontage. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not the house that's not affordable. It's the dirt in which you put it on. If we go in and change our codes in some area of town, please, I know we can't do this in South Tampa. April, stop looking at me like that. There are some places in this town where we can take an RS50 and divide it so we can have builders such as Hops 360, African-American-owned builders come in and build, women-owned builders, Hispanic-owned builders come in and build smaller, affordable houses on smaller lots. Again, we can't do it in all parts of this city. But to answer to your question, we need to change the codes to be able to build more affordable houses.
That was Joseph Cicro. Coming up is Walter Smith.
You know, last week I was reading, doing my research as typical. And of course, you know, in the House, in the Senate right now, there's a bill that's being pushed through. That's one more committee on the Senate side that will take away inclusion, the powers of local government to be able to even dictate such things. So that won't even matter in a little bit, and that's ridiculous. And to use such terminology as voluntary, like developers are really going to voluntarily add an inclusionary area somewhere in what they're building. We have got to be more careful about what we're saying and what we're doing. We've got to pay attention to what's happening in our communities and what's happening in Tallahassee. And we've got to hold our legislators accountable, even at the city council level, because they're taking our local powers away to be able to govern and be able to do what's necessary for our constituents here in the Tampa Bay area, and that's wrong.
Here's Walter Smith. Here's John Dinfelder.
Walter's a tough act to follow, and especially on that one, I agree completely. When I was on council last time, Pat, good question. I do work with the private sector quite a bit. I think an important component is to work with the private sector and create incentives. And last time I was on council, we created incentives in the Channel District to include incentives for affordable housing. So if you're going to build a high-rise and you want some bonus, you know, density and that sort of thing, you can do it if you include affordable housing. They've done some of that over in the Encore project. And speaking of the Encore project, we have a perfect partner to be working with on this issue. And Sandy Friedman did a great job with the Challenge Fund in getting together, and Kathy was there, in getting together all the partners, working with the nonprofits, working with the Housing Authority. We need to set a goal, okay? I've said earlier in this campaign, I think we should set a goal of 500 houses a year, 1,000 houses a year, homes a year to attain that goal. And we also need to do a better job with the CRA. I'll get to the CRA hopefully in another question. Thank you.
That was John Dinkfelder. This is Stephen Lauder.
You know, you bring up affordable housing, and I think there's two things here. There's affordable housing and low-income housing. because what's affordable to you might not be affordable to somebody else. And the problem is that, you know, one of the things when we think about affordable is in Seminole Heights, it used to be an affordable place to live, but it's not anymore. You can't rent a house for less than $1,200, $1,300, and a lot of people can't afford that. The city's made some poor decisions in selling lots to Domain Homes for $1. Yeah. Domain Homes is not respecting the historical integrity of our neighborhoods, and then they're selling homes for, I believe, $180,000, but you can't make more than $52,000. After I did the math on that, that still equates to about 40% of that person's income going towards housing. I'm sorry, but that's not acceptable. And so we have to work better, like Walter said, at our state level, at our county level, to really influence change and make sure that we're being advocates for affordable housing. We have to hold people accountable to that. The other thing we can do is, you're right, they're not going to volunteer to do inclusivity incentives. You incentivize them. Provide better Florida area ratios. You make sure that they're close to transportation. You make sure that they're good to Yeah, they're good near education, and they're good near child care. And if we can do that, I think we can move the needle on that.
That was Stephen Lytle. Now, as
I look at three tiers to affordable housing. You have low income, working class, some say workforce, and market rate. The builders don't like me because I like inclusionary zoning. It works. It's successful. So person's down here, seeing person here and here, they want to get there too. It's the psyche of the mind. Everybody wants to live good. Everybody wants to live successful. But for me, I think a community business ordinance works. Detroit has one. Those top businesses that want incentives from the city, $75 million, $1 million abatement properties, now we get into a community business agreement to where now, what are you going to give back? So now we get that community that may be affected or an area that we know needs money to do whatever. We now get them to come into a community business agreement saying this is what you're going to give back to communities so that community can thrive, it can be successful, and the people can get housing and so forth and so on.
Thank you.
Well, that's Orlando Gudis. He is one of the people running in District 5 in East Tampa. City of Tampa elections are tomorrow. His opponent is Jeffrey Rhodes. He was not at the forum that we went to on Friday. On Friday, the Tampa Tiger Bay Club hosted a forum attended by five of the six candidates running for Tampa City Council. We're also hearing from District 1 candidates Joseph Citro and Walter Smith, District 3 candidates John Dingfelder and Stephen Lytle. Well, we have time for, there was one more question that was asked. We're not going to get to hear from all five of the candidates right now, but we will hear from the one candidate who is there at the, from the District 5 race. Orlando Goods is going to answer this very last question about land use in East Tampa, which is the district that he's running for against Jeffrey Rhodes. So here is the question about land use in East Tampa. And the response from Orlando Gudis, I want to let you know that you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. Here's the response.
Mimi Osiason, a big part of your responsibilities on the city council is land use. And we've been hearing a lot about how East Tampa has been left out. What are your ideas for using land use policies to help the economic development of East Tampa?
Well, I sit on the East Tampa CAC board for our CRA. Right now, we're writing our own RFP as it relates to housing. We want to be able to have our plan of who gets our money, because when you look at the city plan, there's certain criteria that people just can't meet. So we want to make sure we have our own plan in play that we can help those. I also look at 22nd Street and also 29th. I want to go in with some of our CRA money, and I want to go start buying property so I can tear down some of that stuff or rebuild some of that stuff. I've got a thriving community. That's going to make us look good. That's going to make that economic base come up. And now we can start really doing some things.
You know, when I think about what you're asking, I go back to Seminole Heights where I live, because many years ago, Seminole Heights was not in a good condition, right? But what happened?
All right, well, that was Orlando Gudis answering the question from about the East Tampa land use. And Orlando Gudis is facing Jeffrey Rhodes. And In District 1, Joseph Citro is facing Walter Smith. In District 3, John Dingfelder is running against Stephen Lytle. The Tampa City elections are tomorrow. Of course, you also have the mayor's race in the Tampa City city elections, and that's between David Straz and Jane Castor, the former police chief. My name is Sean Canaan. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. If you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts about this program, about the forum that you just heard, give me a call at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message next show. You can also join the conversation online at wmnf.org/news or on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at WMNF News. I want to thank our engineers Alvaro Montealegre and Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan, and I'm going to be hosting Radioactivity tomorrow morning at 11. Tomorrow at noon, your hero Mark Bureau will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned right now for Executive Session with John Gilmore. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. And later on this afternoon, you'll be able to find this full audio on our website, wmnf.org/news. Thanks so much for listening.